This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Trump's meeting with Duterte. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka, on this Monday, November 13. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump has wrapped up his trip to Asia with a meeting with Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte. It does not appear that human rights was a major topic of discussion.
Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore says he'll continue his campaign despite a sexual assault allegation.
An earthquake near the border of Iran and Iraq has left hundreds of people dead with desperate search and rescue efforts underway.
And what's happening on board the USS Ronald Reagan as the Navy practices war exercises in the Sea of Japan?
The Reagan is a huge ship. There are about 6,000 crew and other pilots and people like that on the ship. And everyone really is going about their business, making sure that they are prepared, they are trained in the event of some real-life situation that they have to respond to. They're prepared to do that.
Wall Street Journal reporter Alistair Gale recounts his weekend visit with the crew of the Reagan. President Trump today is wrapping up his 12-day trip to Asia, completing it with a visit with his Philippine counterpart, Rodrigo Duterte. Their meeting was one of the most anticipated of the economic summit of East and Southeast Asian leaders in the Philippine capital of Manila, with human rights groups pressing Mr. Trump to take a tough line on Mr. Duterte over his bloody war on drugs.
We've had a great relationship. This has been very successful. We have many meetings today with many other leaders.
When reporters asked Mr. Duterte if the issue of human rights came up behind closed doors, the Philippine president shut them down by saying it was not a news conference. Meanwhile, White House spokeswoman Sarah Sanders said human rights were mentioned briefly during conversations that included topics like ISIS, illegal drugs, and trade. More than 3,900 people have been killed in a war on drugs that Mr. Duterte declared when he took office last year. His government says the police act in self-defense, but critics say there is no accountability. Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore says he has no intention of quitting the race, despite a newspaper's accusations that he assaulted a 14-year-old and pursued teenage girls when he was in his 30s. Campaign officials say they're convinced a Washington Post story that made the allegations public is a political hit job. Mr. Moore, the Republican candidate, is not facing any criminal charges.
To think that grown women would wait 40 years to come before, right before an election, to bring charges is absolutely unbelievable.
The Washington Post published a story last week that included an interview with a woman who said Mr. Moore touched her in her underwear in Mr. Moore's home when she was 14. The Post story also said three other women claimed Mr. Moore asked to date them when they were between the ages of 16 and 18, and Mr. Moore was in his 30s. The special election, December 12th, features Mr. Moore against Democrat Doug Jones. Some tense moments at the Mall of America in Minnesota last evening. Two men were stabbed during an attempted robbery. Bloomington police were dispatched to the men's department of the Macy's department store in the Giant Mall following reports of a stabbing. Chief Jeff Potts says it was soon realized the situation was an interrupted theft. The suspect went into someone's dressing room in an attempt to steal that person's property. The victim confronted the suspect, who then pulled out a knife and started stabbing him.
It sounds like what happened is when he went out to show his family the items that he was trying on, the suspect was back in the fitting room and attempted to take some property.
Investigators say the victim began to yell, and that's when his family rushed over. The second stabbing victim was believed to be a family member or close friend trying to help. Both men were transported to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The police chief said the suspect is in custody with what looked to be minor superficial wounds. It's 10 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. As the end-of-year deadline approaches for Congress to deliver a tax reform bill to President Trump, here's a deeper dive on some of the big differences between what the House has proposed and what the Senate has in mind. We're joined by Herb Jackson, Washington correspondent at The Record in New Jersey. Herb set this up.
Each house has different members and different goals, and they're putting different priorities in where they want tax reform to come. So, for example, the House was really big on simplification, and they cut the number of brackets down to 3 originally, and then they put in a 4th one at the top of the top of the income level. The Senate is keeping 7 brackets, but shrinking them. So you're going to see more people filing in different brackets. The House increased the child tax credit a little less than the Senate did. The big, big, big difference that's going to keep people talking all week is that the Senate puts off for the first year a corporate tax cut. Yeah. That had been one of President Trump's centerpieces, saying that right now our top corporate tax rate is 35%. No one really pays that, but that's what it is on the books, and that's one of the highest in the industrial world. He wanted to get it down to 15. Eventually, they settled on 20. But now the Senate is saying, yeah, we'll do it at 20, but we'll do it the year after next, not this coming year. So these are going to be things they're going to have to iron out, assuming both of these houses can pass a bill, and then they go to conference and try and figure out what to include.
It would be oversimplified, I guess, to state that, for example, with the House plan putting this corporate tax rate at 20% next year, the Senate wanting it in 2019, that they split the difference and say, okay, 6 months delay. Right.
I really couldn't see that happening. It just makes all the bookkeeping much too screwy. You know, everything's going to be on different, you know, calendar years. So, there are places where they could split. The Senate, for example, would eliminate completely the state and local tax deduction. So that's state income, property taxes, sales taxes in states that don't have an income tax. Senate would get rid of it entirely. The House, which has more Republican members from states like New York, New Jersey, California, where those taxes are, a key to being able to afford to live in those places, the House put in a $10,000limit for property taxes. So you could still deduct up to $10,000 of property. You wouldn't be able to deduct income or sales taxes anymore. Senate got rid of that entirely. That's a big sticking point between them. They're going to have to fight that out, and it could be a factor on whether the House can get the bill passed next week if members who are afraid that the Senate will take it away don't want to give their vote for it in the first place.
Mm. We're speaking with Herb Jackson, Washington correspondent at The Record in New Jersey, part of the USA Today network, and we're talking about the differences between the House and Senate Republican tax plans. So this the deadline in which they have to have this stuff reconciled, I know it's end of the year. Is that firm? Is it possible that if they don't work things out, they could extend?
No, it's their deadline. It's a political goal. The president wants to sign a bill by Christmas. They'd like to get a bill to him by Christmas. They'd like to be able to show the people who put them in charge of both houses and gave them the White House that they can actually deliver on something they promised. And they see this as a political necessity. But they're still going to have to figure out a way to get members to vote for it and deal with the things that they're driven by. There's some Republicans who are going to have to weigh whether it's more dangerous to them to vote against it and look like the Congress can't get anything done than to vote for something that might hurt their district.
Mm. The differences on the estate tax, which involve many zeros that I'll never have or understand, that how significant is that difference between the House and Senate?
Well, the Senate would double the exemption, which means that right now it applies to estates of $5 million or more, and it would go up to $10 million next year under the Senate bill, but then stay there. In the House, it would keep going up until it was eventually eliminated in 6 years.
Thanks, Herb. Herb Jackson, Washington correspondent at The Record in New Jersey. It's 20 minutes after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
A powerful 7.3 magnitude earthquake has hit the Iraq-Iran border, killing more than 300 people and injuring thousands. The quake was so powerful that the tremors were felt in some regional countries, including Turkey, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates. Turkey has dispatched emergency personnel and aid to northern Iraq as officials express their deep sadness at the tragedy. The chairman of the House's Tax Rating Committee is expressing confidence that the chamber won't go along with the Senate's proposal to eliminate the deduction for property tax. taxes, setting up a major flashpoint as Republicans aim to put a tax cut bill on President Trump's desk before Christmas. Republican Congressman Kevin Brady told Fox News middle-class taxpayers would not pay more under the GOP plan.
We are both taxing less. We are eliminating a lot of these deductions so we can lower the tax rates for every American. But we're not just stopping there. We're talking about an economy that grows paychecks.
The House bill allows homeowners to deduct up to $10,000 in property taxes. The Senate proposal unveiled by GOP leaders last week eliminates the entire deduction. President Trump is wrapping up his trip to Asia with an international summit and one-on-one meetings with international partners, including his Philippine host, who is overseeing a bloody drug war. Trump met with the prime ministers of India and Australia and the president of the Philippines, who's been condemned by human rights groups for his crackdown on drug dealers and users. Trump says he'll make a major statement on trade and North Korea when he returns.
A lot of things are happening on trade, and I'll be announcing pretty much what happened here. And also with other meetings, including China and South Korea and lots of other places. We'll be announcing that for the most part in a statement. I'll make it from the White House.
The president will return to Washington on Wednesday. And if you got pulled over in Billings, Montana last week, you may have gotten a turkey instead of a ticket. The police pulled over drivers and let them go with a warning and a frozen bird. Only drivers who committed minor traffic violations were let off the hook with a Thanksgiving turkey. A local businessman donated the 20 turkeys that were handed out.
Well, it's good clarification. So it's like you were rewarded for bad behavior or encouraged to do so.
Causing an accident.
You're right.
A little over the speed limit, you got a turkey.
Very nice. Thank you, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you could be with us. Welcome into Monday. As millennials buy homes in greater numbers, new wrinkles are emerging in an age-old process. Gone are the days of popping a champagne cork once the purchase and mortgage forms are signed. Today, more first-time buyers rush to share their newfound status as homeowners across social media. Wall Street Journal reporter Emily Glazer has found that has led some of these buyers to construct elaborate photo shoots in or outside a first home. Emily, what have you found?
Basically, what we learned is that not only have millennials been buying their first homes, that's been going on for a few years now, but they are obsessed with sharing it and doing it in a really fun way. So they are crafting these elaborate photo shoots in or outside of their first home, anything with hand poses, dancing, piggyback rides through the front door, and then sharing it on Facebook, Instagram, you name it, any social media channel so that their friends and family know they did indeed buy their first home.
All right. So as you mentioned, this can get quite elaborate, but that many times, I guess, involves the real estate agent.
Yes, it was really interesting to find, you know, initially the story idea came about because I was scrolling through my own Facebook feed and saw people I knew, you know, based in cities across the United States, I would say largely smaller cities where it is more affordable to buy a house or an apartment posing. And so after doing some research, there are these Pinterest pages replete with different boards for inspiration of like different poses and different things to do. And there are all these Facebook pages that are run by the real estate agents. So they're using this as a marketing mechanism also. Spoke with people in near Denver, Alabama, Florida, I mean, all over the United States, and the real estate agents realize if they don't bring, you know, take a photo with, even with their phone, it doesn't have to be a fancy camera, like the buyers are usually going to ask. I even spoke with one real estate agent, Corey Maurice Gilmore, who is based in Alabama, and he had such a funny story about how, you know, everyone expects him to take a photo these days after they, you know, sign the paperwork or, you know, even just when they get their key, different sort of momentous moments of buying the house. And he did talk to someone who was really upset more than a year ago. He photographed a couple who bought a house in Madison, Alabama, and the wife quickly texted him after she sent the photo and was like, do not use these photos. Do not post them on Facebook. So he knows now to take at least 10 photos, quickly snapping them on his phone so that the couple will be happy with at least one that he can post.
Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Emily Glazer. She's written a funny piece about how millennials react these days when they buy their first home, specifically when it comes to staging photos of this great achievement. So tell us about this woman who had to dash out for the fake eyelashes.
So one real estate broker, Marvin Martinez, was basically ready to sign with a client right outside of Denver on her first home, and she just would not take the photo because she knew it was going to go up on this Facebook page, and she knew that page at the time, I think it had like 80,000 followers, so it's a lot of people. So they literally delayed the signing by an hour until she returned with the fake eyelashes on and a new outfit. And, you know, Mr. Martinez, the realtor, was like, we just waited. Like, what else could we do? So it's getting a little ridiculous sometimes.
Thanks, Emily. Wall Street Journal reporter Emily Glazer. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, the holidays are fast approaching. Order gifts for everyone on your list with a click of a mouse. Let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how for only $49.99, you can get the family gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter my code DEAL in the search bar. That's 75% off. Omaha Steaks offers the most flavorful, tender-aged beef, aged for 21 days to unlock the full flavors of the cuts, hand-trimmed and vacuum-sealed. They also have veggies, desserts, appetizers, fresh seafood, and so much more. Right now, Omaha Steaks is giving an exclusive savings for our listeners. Listen to everything that you'll get for less than $50. Two filet mignons, two top sirloins, two boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts, four kielbasa sausages, four burgers, four potatoes au gratin, four caramel apple tartlets, one Omaha Steak seasoning packet, plus four additional kielbasa sausages free. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter my code DEAL in the search bar, and get a 75% savings. It's the gift guaranteed to be a hit.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. It is Monday, November 13. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Hundreds dead from an earthquake on the Iran-Iraq border. Trump meets with Duterte in the Philippines. Roy Moore says he'll stay in the Alabama Senate race. ESPN says NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell wants a new contract worth $50 million a year, use of a private jet for life, and health insurance forever. Hard to afford health insurance, I guess, even at $50 million a year. Hollywood's Governor Awards last night saw no mention of sex harassment during speeches, and the message in a bottle that floated from Rhode Island to Florida. That story in about 20 minutes. Three U.S. aircraft carriers with around 200 jet fighters in total sailed in close formation with several other warships in the Sea of Japan yesterday, the largest display of U.S. naval firepower in the region for a decade, as nearby North Korea trades war threats with Washington. The combined drill is the first three-carrier operation in the Western Pacific region since 2007. Wall Street Journal reporter Alistair Gale was on board the USS Ronald Reagan and joins us now. Alistair, what did you see?
You know, the Reagan is a huge ship. There are about 6,000 crew and other pilots and people like that on the ship. And everyone really is going about their business, making sure that they are prepared, they are trained, they have everything ready, so that if they are needed to be called on in the event of some real-life situation that they have to respond to, they're prepared to do that. So we saw lots of flight drills where fighter jets were taking off in quick succession and coming back to land on the ship, which is a very hard thing to do in the high seas that were a bit of a problem in the Sea of Japan where the ship was. And then on Sunday, we saw two other aircraft carriers, the Theodore Roosevelt and the Nimitz, come into close formation with the Reagan and some other warships from the U.S. and Japan and really form almost like an armada of U.S. naval firepower. So it's very impressive to watch. And, you know, these guys are just making sure that they're ready for any situation.
It's anticipated that if something were to happen with North Korea, it would involve, what, a substantial air campaign from fighter jets off of those carriers?
Right. So, you know, if there is a conflict situation with North Korea, aircraft would be a very important piece of that plan of action. And, you know, aircraft carriers, of course, if they're out there, as these three were in the Sea of Japan, they're pretty close to North Korea. So you can get, you know, there's a total of about 200 fighter jets that were on these carriers. They could have got them to North Korea in, you know, around a minute or so. I mean, they can launch these things about one plane every 20 seconds.
Wow.
So this is going to be a very important part of any operation, and let's hope it doesn't come to that. But if it's needed, they would probably be one of the first group of, the first wave, if you like, of you know, people who would be going into to tackle the problem.
Are the men and women on the ships aware of, say, the finger pointing and back and forth that's occurred between Mr. Trump and Mr. Kim?
They are. I think they see less of it than we do. You know, they're not online much. There's fairly limited internet access. Of course, they can watch TV news. You know, they do get newspapers and things, so they're aware of what's going on. But you know, I spoke to several crew members who say, you know, they filter that stuff out. They don't think about that when they're going through their routines. They are focused on making sure that they're prepared. You know, they say some of their family members have expressed concerns about them, but these are all professionals who are focused on doing a job. So, you know, I didn't sense there was any fear or any concern on the ship. There was just a very serious sense of purpose amongst the crew there to make sure that, you know, they're ready if they're called on.
Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Alistair Gale. He's based in Tokyo. He spent some time aboard the USS Ronald Reagan in the Sea of Japan. So I assume they don't train 24/7. How do some of these folks decompress on a ship that big with so many folks on there, as you said?
Well, they do work very long days. I mean, these guys are working sort of 12, 14, sometimes 16 hours a day.
Wow.
So, you know, a lot of them just really want to sleep once they've finished their work. But, you know, there's lots going on the ship. We saw a touch rugby grain that was going on in one of the aircraft hangars. They can watch movies. You know, there are various activities that they can do on the ship, recreational. There's a sort of painting group as well. So there's enough to keep them occupied. But these guys are sort of, most of their time really is taken up with, you know, the serious stuff of preparing themselves.
Mm. How long are these particular deployments? Do they even know?
Well, this three-carrier exercise is only running through Tuesday, but the Reagan itself, they don't know when they'll be returning to port. They are based, the Reagan is based here in Japan in Yokosuka near Tokyo. They say that they hope that they are back before the end of the year, but that's something that they really don't know. It seems fairly likely that they're going to be out at sea for Thanksgiving. So, you know, we saw posters up for special Thanksgiving meals. So, you know, those sailors are going to be doing Thanksgiving on board, but, you know, they're crossing their fingers that they get back to port in time for Christmas.
Thanks, Alistair. It's Wall Street Journal reporter Alistair Gale, who's based in Tokyo, spent time aboard the USS Ronald Reagan. It is 19 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, we know Broncos quarterback Brock Osweiler, who is back with the team after short and unsuccessful stops in Houston and Cleveland, was known coming out of college for having a very strong throwing arm, and he still has it, even if his passes don't always hit their intended target. That was never more evident than during Sunday Night Football when Osweiler went to throw a pass away to avoid taking a sack and wound up drilling an unsuspecting person in the head who was standing on the Broncos' sideline. The pass appeared to hit the man square in the forehead and knocked him right to the ground. The sound of the ball's impact was even picked up by the TV broadcast.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. According to USA Today, the man appeared to be with the replay crew, and of course we hope that he's okay after that hit, which appeared to be very painful.
Wow.
I mean, you've never seen somebody get hit so squarely in
Is
the head
right?
with that ball. You know, the end, the point of the ball,
Ooh.
You know, right into his forehead, right
wow.
in the middle of his forehead.
So it was a nice tight spiral, is that what you're saying?
It was a great pass.
Even though he was throwing
the
it
sideline.
Away.
Yeah. I don't think he was never so accurate than he was. If he was, you know, aiming for that guy's forehead, it was the most accurate pass he's ever thrown.
And because of the noise, we suspect that like one of those guys with the plastic saucers that picks up sideline chatter and stuff was
probably
nearby.
Close by. Yeah. Because that was, I mean, you could hear the thud, you know, come right up to the broadcast.
Poor guy.
Yeah. And here's a lesson to criminals who are being interrogated by police. Your flatulence might end the interrogation, but not the investigation. That's the word from Kansas City, where a police interrogation of a man charged with drug and gun offenses ended prematurely when an investigator was driven from the room by the suspect's excessive flatulence. Hmm. A detective reported that when asked for his address, 24-year-old Sean Sykes Jr. leaned to one side and let one loose before answering.
Jeez.
The Kansas City Star reports that Sykes continued to be flatulent, and the detective was forced to quickly end the interview. That didn't stop the wheels of justice from turning, however. After the air cleared, Sykes was eventually charged with being a felon in possession of three firearms and possession with intent to sell cocaine.
Wow.
So he delayed the inevitable.
Yeah.
But, you know, a new tactic that we haven't seen before, I guess, to try and slow things down a little bit.
Jeez. So in those interrogation rooms like we see on TV.
Yeah.
Right, often just appear to be like concrete walls with no outside windows or anything, so there's not much place for gas to escape, I would imagine.
Yes, yes, a tiny room, and you know, who knows what he had for, you know, breakfast or lunch that day that maybe might have added to it, so yeah.
That is something. Guy's eyes watering. Can you just imagine that?
Yeah. Like, you know what?
Just sit there. I'll be back.
I'll be back in a little bit. Maybe we'll move to another room.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Mike. It's 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. Hey, glad you're with us on this Monday. Millions of Americans are living on the edge. One in five households has zero or negative wealth, according to a new report by the Institute for Policy Studies, a progressive think tank in Washington, D.C. The combined impact of $1 trillion in credit card debt, $1.4 trillion in student loan debt, and stagnant wages apparently are taking a toll. As part of that, MarketWatch says for the first time since the Great Recession, lenders have given more consumers with subprime or below average credit scores access to credit cards. U.S. homes have regained value since the Great Recession, but many households have not. The report found millions of American families struggle with zero or negative wealth, meaning they owe more than they own, which means they have nothing to fall back on if an unexpected expense comes up, like a broken down car or perhaps an illness. In a further breakdown of data, the report revealed that 30% of African American households and 27% of Latino households are, quote, underwater financially. It is 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, at least 300 people were killed and thousands injured in Iran and Iraq when a magnitude 7.3 earthquake jolted the region. Local officials say the death toll will likely rise as search and rescue teams reach remote areas of Iran. The quake caused heavy damage in some villages where houses were made of earth and bricks. The quake also triggered landslides that are hindering rescue efforts. Hours after personally insulting North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, President Trump touted his mediation skills and said he would be open to resolving territorial disputes in the South China Sea. Trump told Vietnam's president he's a very good mediator and arbitrator.
Getting along with other nations is a good thing, not a bad thing, believe me.
After North Korea's state news agency on Saturday called Trump a crazy old man, Trump called Kim short and fat. Alabama Republican Roy Moore says a lawsuit will be filed over the newspaper report carrying allegations he had sexual contact with a 14-year-old girl four decades ago.
They are completely false and untrue about something that happened nearly 40 years ago.
While pressure to quit the race 4 weeks before Election Day intensified from within the Republican Party, Moore assured supporters last night at a Huntsville, Alabama gym that the Washington Post story is fake news. Scientists say global carbon pollution went up 2% this year after three straight years when it didn't go up at all. Carbon dioxide emissions are a key cause of global warming. The report dashes hopes that emissions from the burning of coal, oil, and gas had peaked. Most of this year's increase came from China. The three UCLA men's basketball players arrested on shoplifting charges last week will remain in China and were not with the team on its flight back to Los Angeles after the Bruins' season-opening win over Georgia Tech on Saturday. The three freshmen, who were questioned about allegedly stealing sunglasses from a store next to the team's hotel, were released on bail and have been staying at a hotel with a team representative. Sources say the players could be stuck in China for a week or two.
How scary you think that is, by the way?
I think I'd be terrified.
Knowing that your team has left.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that the representative from the school stayed behind, but that would be very unnerving.
And apparently there's video of this happening, they say, so not good.
Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. A Rhode Island woman who placed some of her mother's cremated ashes in a bottle along with a message said the object floated all the way to Florida. Athena McAleer of Charlestown, Rhode Island, said she decorated a bottle and filled it with some of the cremated ashes of her mother, Cindy Rounds, who died in 2010, and included a letter about the woman's death from cancer. McAleer's fiancé, a fisherman, released the bottle from a vessel in Georges Bank, Rhode Island, in September 2013. Ms. McAleer said time passed and she started to believe she would never hear word of the bottle until she heard from Stephanie Winnick, who found the bottle on Cinnamon Beach in Palm Coast, Florida. She said she had her husband break the bottle open because the cork would not budge. She was surprised when she read the message inside. Ms. Winnick said she and her husband spread some of Cindy's ashes around a palm tree before putting the rest into a new bottle to continue the journey. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.